Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Bonnie Miller, the TIPQC Maternal Quality Improvement Specialist. Today, we have Dr. Angela Nakahara joining us to share about her poster, Two Patients, Appraising Risk for Both Mother and Fetus in a Periviable Deliveries Less Than 26 Weeks. Welcome and congratulations, Dr. Nakahara, for the Best in Category poster for Joint Infant and Maternal Projects.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So, tell us about your career journey and about your interest in quality improvement.
So in terms of my career journey, I started off with an undergraduate degree in sports medicine at the Pepperdine University in California. I knew that I always wanted to go into medicine, so this was a great kind of introduction into the medical field. While studying there, I also did a study abroad program where I was in Heidelberg, Germany, and was inspired to continue traveling throughout my life. I then had the opportunity to enroll at the University of Queensland Ochsner Clinical School for my medical training, which allowed me to spend two preclinical years in Brisbane, Australia, and then return to the States in New Orleans, Louisiana to complete my training. I loved it in New Orleans, how could you not, with the great food and music, and so stayed there at the Ochsner Clinic Foundation for my OBGYN residency. I also kind of always knew that I potentially wanted to pursue a subspecialty training. And I'm proud to say that I'm just about to graduate from my maternal fetal medicine fellowship from the University of Tennessee Health Science Center here in Memphis. In terms of my interest in QI, it primarily stems because I think this is an active and powerful way to improve patient care and health outcomes. Unfortunately, we see that patients that we have the privilege of taking care of here in Memphis are disproportionately affected by pregnancy complications, including possible periviable births due to the numerous maternal and or fetal conditions that they have. I've been a part of many discussions with patients throughout my fellowship about interventions to pursue during the periviable period. And I really think it's our job as maternal fetal medicine providers to always look for ways to provide patient-centered and equitable care in a way that's really meaningful to the patient, even in these difficult situations. And so as it pertains to this project and many other opportunities, I think QI is a great way to achieve this and to look into how we could do better for each patient that we take care of.
You are correct. And I really like that. I like that you've been to Germany and Austria, places I would like to go one day. So I'm glad you made your way to Memphis and working with those patients. Can you tell me a little bit about, or quite a bit about your project and what caused you to go into that to say, hey, I really want to look into this and how we can make this better for patients?
Yes, definitely. So this was a retrospective cohort study that evaluated maternal complications and neonatal survival in periviable deliveries at our tertiary academic center. And we compared the outcomes for these deliveries between 21 weeks and 0 days to 25 weeks and 6 days and separated the two groups at the 24-week mark. We picked this gestational age because this is traditionally kind of what is the quote-unquote cutoff for viability, where we do offer or pursue more medical intervention if delivery is considered in these babies. We looked at neonatal endpoints, including overall survival, survival without grade 3 or 4 intraventricular hemorrhage, and then survival to discharge. On the maternal side, we looked at a composite outcome, which included cesarean section, wound infection, venous thromboembolism, endometritis, blood transfusion, hysterectomy, and maternal death, just because these outcomes in themselves tend to be quite rare. Overall, we had a little over 100 infants in our study with a pretty equal distribution between those before 24 weeks and those after. As we would expect, survival and survival without intraventricular hemorrhage was greater in those after 24 weeks, which was seen in 34% of babies compared to 75% in those before. And rates of survival without intraventricular hemorrhage was 26% versus 66% if it were after 24 weeks. Additionally, cesarean delivery was performed more in those after 24 weeks, and this was more likely to be a classical cesarean section in 45% of these patients, as compared to the likelihood of a classical section before 24 weeks, which was only seen in 18%. This is most likely because patients were counseled about the more aggressive interventions that we could be offering at that 24-week mark, as I previously mentioned. Lastly, while overall maternal complication rates were similar, deliveries before 24 weeks were more likely to have a combined neonatal death and maternal complications, with death seen in 64% of these patients.
So when you're thinking about applying your study into other hospitals or looking at the NICU, or the neonatology, what do you think, how could they use that, your study, in to help them?
Yeah, I think what this study really highlights is that while we have made significant improvements in neonatal survival and survival without intraventricular hemorrhage, which is a great feat in the last 20 years or so, when you really look at the rates of both maternal and neonatal complications combined, that's actually seen almost twice as much, 11 versus 6% in those less than 24 weeks. And so while many conversations about perivival deliveries are centered around the neonatal outcomes, we do need to make patients aware of the fact of maternal risk that need to be considered when counseling these patients and their families at the edge of viability, for them to be better equipped to make the decision that not only affects their current pregnancy, but potentially affects their future pregnancies.
So how would you recommend the hospitals or people who want to do the future to go about counseling these patients? Is there a set guidelines, or is there something that you were able to find any findings in your research that may help future hospitals?
Yeah, this kind of goes back a little bit to kind of QI improvements, but I think something we didn't get a chance to look at in my study, but I would love to see, is how different decisions are made by families when counseling is provided either from maternal fetal medicine, neonatology, or both. And whether creating a systemized counseling approach would help our patients feel that they had the most information to make decisions when it comes to their deliveries.
Did you find that it was, sometimes it's difficult when you're having those difficult conversations? Are we equipped to have difficult conversations sometimes? I know that we get education on it, but when it comes to real life, how you feel about it and how you speak to it, do you think that we play a role in sometimes their decision making, whether it is best for them, or is it just more of a if we put how we feel about it and we project ourselves upon somebody?
Certainly, I think we all have explicit and implicit biases that can come into play, which, you know, we're all human, that can be a natural part of these conversations. But the systemized counseling, I think, can help make that a little bit more organized so that at least patients are getting the overall similar kind of message, particularly if there's different survival rates and different outcomes seen in different hospital systems. I think it's important to tailor that to patients to set expectations. And a big part that I also like to always just keep in the back of my mind is that these are ongoing conversations for families. It's not a one and done. Oftentimes, it takes families a lot of time to understand what's going on. This was not something that certainly they were expecting out of their pregnancies. Different family members can come into play and kind of sway different opinions or be involved in the conversation. And so I think allowing the time, if it allows in the clinical scenario, to have multiple conversations is quite important.
Yeah, I like that, because I was going to ask you if you found that it's being with somebody in their space and having a conversation, a longer conversation than a short clipped, this is all we can do and what do you want us to do kind of thing. So thank you for looking into that. Is there anything else in this study that you hope that the findings that you hope somebody picks up and carries into to find out more information about this and how it can help for our future babies and moms?
It would really be, my main interest is in that kind of joint conversation. And when I was discussing about maternal fetal medicine, neonatology, or I even like the idea of both, does us presenting a front together and having the conversation prior to speaking to the patient in their room help them kind of have a synchrony in what both sides are looking at? Certainly, sometimes as maternal fetal medicine providers, we are a little bit more maternal centered, whereas obviously neonatology is thinking about the baby. But again, what this project highlights is that really both sides need to be looked at. And the mom needs to understand both to make the best decision for her.
Do you think that maybe adding a counselor or even if it's a chaplain or somebody like that, would you have the maternal fetal medicine and the neonatologist and somebody who is there to help them with support, not to make decisions, or even a doula, someone who is very supportive of that person? Do you think maybe that would help with patients to make a clear decision? Because I think sometimes when you all are separated, the messages, they hear you and then someone says something and I think that person said this and I think that one, and maybe the connection of the two, like you said, when you're in the same space may be helpful.
Yeah, I think if the resources allow, that would be such a great person to have in the part of our team. And even palliative medicine, not in the sense that there's always, you know, doom and gloom at the end of this, but someone who can kind of navigate that conversation for patients. And even if they choose not to pursue kind of all quote unquote traditional interventions, there are still ways that we can make a difficult situation meaningful for the family. And there's so many layers that goes into the interventions that we can offer. I'm just thinking, for example, a classical C-section can mean significant higher morbidity for the mother. But as the different gestational age occurs, does that kind of change? And what else can we offer if not that?
We don't have that one person that you can have a whole team of people who have that toolkit kind of thing. Is there anything else that about this study that you would like to tell us more about for you or your team or the NICU or anything like that?
As you mentioned, just does the help of other team members help in that process? Why are they more successful in other states just to create that equitable care for all patients across the United States?
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you for all of your studies that you've done. Have a great day.
Thank you as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org. That's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.